And welcome to Reliving My Youth. My name is Noel Fogelman. Hey, happy birthday to us. Celebrating our 7th anniversary, I just want to thank everyone who has listened to the show, supported me, gave me guest suggestions, reviews, criticism. I love all of that. I can't believe that after 7 years, we're still going strong and that people still want to come on. Over 300 guests so far. I look to doing the next 300 guests as well. To celebrate our 7th anniversary this week, our guest is someone who was in my top 5 of dream guests when I started this podcast over 7 years ago. It's Corey Glover, the lead singer of the Grammy Award-winning band Living Color. The band's music has been a part of my life since their landmark debut album, Vivid, came out in 1988. It actually just celebrated an anniversary last week. The double platinum album featured the song Cult of Personality. And when you first hear Vernon Reid's guitar riff, it draws you in. It drew me in, and more so than any other song up to that point in my life. I was 13 years old when it came out, and it still has the same effect on me to this day. It's one of the greatest hard rock songs of all time. But surprisingly, it wasn't the debut single for the band. Corey actually gives props to Epic, their record company, for that decision. The song has a place in pop culture, most notably by CM Punk. The wrestler has used the song as his entrance music for over a decade now. Corey talks about performing at WrestleMania that song and just talking with CM Punk about usage of that song. Corey's latest project is the band Sonic Universe. The band features guitarist Mike Orlando from the heavy metal band Adrenaline Mob. Their debut album, It Is What It Is, drops on Friday. I was able to listen to it. It is absolutely fantastic. However, Living Color is still going strong. They have shows throughout the summer, and Corey told me that they're working on new music. Hopefully, it'll come out next year. Like I said, this was a dream guest, and Corey did not disappoint. I hope you enjoy my conversation as much as I did with Corey. So, Corey, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. Before we kind of look back, let's talk about Sonic Universe. The album, It Is What It Is, comes out on the 10th. I was able to hear a copy and I was blown away. I absolutely loved it. I don't want to throw around the term supergroups, but do you consider this to be kind of like a supergroup between, you know, yeah. you? No? And well, you know, Orlando?
The idea of a supergroup is always filled with ego, it feels like to me. Okay. You know, a supergroup oftentimes has a connotation of everybody who's coming to the table is coming with all of their baggage. And we tried really hard not to do that. And, you know, quite frankly, the process of making this record was about having a good time. And we basically did, you know, that when it became like laborious, if it ever becomes laborious, it hasn't become laborious yet. But when it becomes laborious, then it's time to stop doing it, really. When it becomes like a job and, you know, you're sitting there trying to make something happen. This just sort of happened organically. We sat down, went to Mike Orlando's studio, and we just, he had this groove, and I immediately started writing to this groove, and it just sort of worked. And then we did it again, and we did it again, and we did it again. And every time we do it, we were very happy with the results. So can't complain.
No, absolutely not. And he mixed and produced the entire album, correct?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. An incredible musical human being, I believe, and very underrated as in anything that he sort of touches.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know, Adrenaline Mob was great, and you know, unfortunately, yeah. You know, everything that happened.
But, yeah, it was sad, but you know, it's sad sort of circumstances, but not because it wasn't a really, really, really good band, and it sounded really amazing when they were doing it. You know.
Were there any like particular themes you wanted to portray on this album, or like you said, just everything just became like organic when you just got into the studio?
It did become organic, and it sort of made it sort of came together, and it started to have a theme to it, and it started to have an idea that everything was, it was about really just living and being and observing your life personally as it occurred, as it happened, that day, that week, that month. And it sort of coalesced that way.
I guess with the music industry now, everyone just releases singles and like EPs and just, you know, go because they kind of want to be like relevant instead of just dropping an album and then, you know, maybe a couple weeks later, a month later, it's kind of forgotten. And you guys went the, you know, traditional full length album, which, like I said, is fantastic. And I think it'll have some real staying power. Why do you feel like you guys just, you know, went the traditional route with the album?
I think, you know, it's really the best way for people to get to know what this is, you know, and they get to know the music without all the other baggage. You know, it's, of course, there's going to be comparisons to what we did previous to this and what we or what we're doing right now. But and you could see it in its totality when you look at the when you listen to the whole album and say, OK, there it is. That's there's the whole thing, not just bits and pieces that remind you of things that you heard in the past and that sort of tie you in, hook you in that way. We wanted you to feel the whole sort of universe of it all. Excuse the pun.
Right. Yeah. Do you think, like, you know, with you being in Living Color and, you know, Mike previously the Adrenaline Mob, that helped or hurt this project?
I think it helped. I do think it helped. I think it helped a lot. Our both of our collective sort of pasts sort of informed how we were going to make records, how you make the record. And, you know, looking at listening to other things sort of helped inform what this is. You know, for me, and I think for all of us, for both of us, we were trying really hard to think about other bands. And the band that sort of jumped into our heads was, you know, Thin Lizzy.
Okay.
Which does this sound, this, you know, we're both of us are mutual fans of Thin Lizzy and mutual fans of that whole ethos, that whole sort of whiskey in a jar, bar band, sawdust on the floor, you know, that kind of thing. We're trying to get to that as best we could.
Right. Now, do you guys have plans to go out on tour in support of the album?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. As soon as our schedules sort of free up for that to happen, you know, I got a bunch of work with Living Color coming up. And when we don't have those commitments when those commitments are in our rear view, I think we'll concentrate on touring and getting out there and playing.
Right. I mean, how do you guys like balance that? Like, what takes a priority for you?
Well, whatever, you know, this is who I came to the dance with. Living Color is what I came to the dance with.
Right.
And, you know, and there are some things in the pipeline for Living Color that I have to be mindful of, you know. And I don't know if this is a fortunate thing or unfortunate. This is the most work that Living Color has had in a very, very long time. So we had to hop on that opportunity. So we stayed there. I'm going to deal with that and prioritize as I go along.
I just want to go back a few years. Obviously discovered you guys with Little Man. mm-hmm. seen the video late night. I think it was 120 minutes. And
yeah,
love, you know, loved it. And immediately got the album, loved the mm-hmm. cover, and then heard Cult of Personality, even before it was on the radio.
Right.
And Vernon's guitar riff brought me in. I mean, I was a music fan, came out with I was 13. So I was a music fan for years, but before that. But that song just drew me in. And I was immediately hooked. I'm sure you've heard that by 9 million other people, but just talk about just the legacy of that song. And do you just think just now with everything politically going on, it's more relevant than ever?
Well, it was relevant when it was written. It was relevant as the years gone by. I mean, you could, you know, we wrote that song in the middle of the Reagan years, the Reagan Bush years.
Right.
You know, it sort of had a resurgence in, you know, when it was the end of the Clinton era. It got another resurgence when it was Obama. It got resurgence when it was Trump. It has an evergreen effect because the idea, the theory that it comes from existed when it did, which was in the 30s, you know, with Stalin.
Right.
And you know, the Axis powers and FDR and all that stuff. It's just an idea that's evergreen, the best way I can put it. And it has existed forever. I mean, when it's, you know, Canada, you know, Justin Trudeau has a legacy,
right?
It's, you know, you know, the that legacy, those folks with a legacy and with a point of view often sort of make noise. And we wrote a song about it, and it worked, you know?
Was it easy to write?
No. It took a day, really, to write.
Okay.
From establishing the riff to, you know, to Vernon going through his notebook of lyrics and coming up with this thing and sort of putting it all together. And mind you, it didn't look, when we first started, the way you hear it now. You know, it was slightly different. The arrangement was slightly different. And hats off to Ed Stasium, who said, you know, why don't you put this here and put that there, and did the job of a producer and really sort of made it what it is today.
Was it Ed's idea or you guys to incorporate the clips?
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Not what your country can do for you.
It was kind of us. Like, one time we played it, and at the end, I got in my head just to say, ask not what your country can do for you. And that was sort of, that was already baked into the song. So it's like, let's put some other things in there to sort of like strengthen that idea. And, you know, Vernon did some deep diving and found these other clips, and that's what we have. The beginning was going to be Martin Luther King.
Okay.
But the King Foundation wanted a ton of money that we didn't have.
Right.
For the use of it. So, and the Malcolm X thing in the beginning, we got the permission from the family and they signed off on it. So that was good.
Yeah, that was my next question, was going to be, were there any like clips you wanted to get that you couldn't get? So
yeah, it was going to be Free at Last, and right. The King Foundation wanted a lot of money and points on the back end and all kinds of stuff that we didn't have.
Right.
So let's try something new. Let's try something new.
Right. When it was released, did you know you had something with that song?
Oh yeah, we. You know, when they put out Middleman, it was like, why'd you put out Middleman first? It's not really, it's a good song, but it's not a single Cult of Personality. It's like, yeah, we just biding our time, you know, just establishing some stuff. Then we put Cult of Personality out. It'll have a bigger of an impact. And they were right. The record company actually, for the first time ever, was right. So,
yeah.
We were happy. We were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I guess they didn't think it was much of a gamble to do
no.
it.
No. It's like they figured there's enough stuff on this record that is usable and serviceable to a audience. Why not show you a complete hand in your first showing, you know?
Right. And because there's so much like diverse music on that album, and there's something for everybody, and it's, you know, it's great. Like, I guess I can admit, I want to know, I put that on a couple mixtapes for girls back in the day. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
You know, it was such a great song.
Yeah.
And I guess that's varying success, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. But that was sort of, I Want to Know was sort of like the song that sort of, it was about the time it was coming out. And I think everything else was sort of us sort of looking forward. That one was sort of looking back, and I Want to Know was looking back, and that was one of an early Living Color song. I mean, this so earlier, early enough that when I wasn't even in the band, that song was around. So that and Funny Vibe and were older incarnations of the band, and we just sort of brought it forward.
Whose idea was it for the video for Glamour Boys?
It was the guys who did our album art, the Thunder Jockeys.
Okay.
They're, you know, just scenarios and where we are actually observers of this thing, of this phenomenon, which is not, again, this oldest time, this, you know, hipsters, all kinds of people. This is not new, obviously not new, but the song is about us observing these people. So why not put us in scenarios where that occurs, on the subway, at the club, wherever, you know, an art gallery, wherever all these folks sort of gather.
Did that kind of have like a kind of direct, you know, correlation to Open Letter, pretty much?
Well, Open Letter was about New York, really, about New York City.
And gentrification, and, yeah.
Yeah, and how much New York City was changing even then. I mean, now it's obvious that New York City is in a constant state of flux, and it's right. A constant change. But I think by the time we came along, it was the beginning stages of that, and that was kind of disconcerting to us. You know, places that we could rely upon to be there were no longer there. And what we were most concerned about is like, who is this for? Who are you building these things, and why are you changing these neighborhoods, and who are you changing it to and for? And that was our biggest concern, and still is our biggest concern. You know, what does $5,000 in rent, who are you doing that for? Mm-hmm. Who makes that kind of money to pay for a 2-bedroom apartment in a high rise? Who is that for?
I mean, especially now when they, you know, lost so much revenue because of the pandemic, they even have to charge even more for rent.
Yeah, you know, but it's still about greed.
It's still
about how much will the market bear, and then take 15% more on top of that, you know, and that's about greed. You know, there are certain basic sort of necessities in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we as a society are concerned about the necessities. We're thinking about the accessories. We're more concerned about, you know, what accessories do you need in this life, not necessities that you need. And that is, you know, that's the state of the world we live in at this point. So, you know, we were saying that then, still saying that kind of stuff, still talking about that kind of thing. You know, I think, you know, the internet and social media and AI and that kind of stuff only exacerbates those issues.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, these issues were always around from the, you know, beginning of time, and they still always be. And it's just unfortunate how just, you know, average family lives paycheck by paycheck just to, you know, to get by now. And it's, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a shame.
Was it the things you have to do in order to survive that, you know, the point at which you stop having to concern yourself with those sort of things, the better off I think you'll be. Unfortunately, that means you have to have a great deal of income for that, for you not to worry about those kind of things.
Right.
And those people who do have that kind of income don't consider themselves a part of society. They, you know, they think of themselves aside from, on the outside looking in, and it's a problem.
And you mentioned AI, and obviously still it's a fluid situation, you know, in whether it's a job creator, job loss, we're not sure yet. Would you consider incorporating that into your music?
I've thought about it. I've tried to use ChatGPT sometimes to write lyrics, and it's horrible. They write bad, bad songs. So no, I wouldn't consider it. Yeah. I've thought, like I said, I've thought about it, but it's not, it hasn't, it isn't doing what I want it to do. And it doesn't have any of the emotional heft that it needs to make any sense to me.
Right. Have you, as a result of that, have you ever experienced like writer's block?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
There have been years when I felt like I couldn't write anything. I didn't have anything to say. And I've tried to force myself to do it, and it doesn't really work. And, you know, the inspiration hits me in very strange points in time. You know, I could be sitting eating dinner, and all of a sudden someone comes to me and I write it down. And hopefully I can use it later. But it's about really sort of like being open to observe what's happening around you. And that's what I write from, observation.
Right. I jump ahead real quick to your solo album, Hymns.
Right.
I absolutely love, and it's such a far cry from, you know, the work with, you know, with Living Color. I think Lowball Express, Able Rain are like my two favorites.
There was a time I thought our love would last, but clinging to the past is a fool's game. I guess I've got myself to blame. If I knew then what I know now, I'd never let you go. I'll let you know how much I love you so. Until the six turns into nine, until the clock stops ticking time, until the Lord calls out my name, just wanna live in this April. That keeps haunting me with your eyes, the ones that always make me cry. As I sit here in this quiet, the smell of your sweet perfume is all that's left. The one that smells like angel's breath. Until the six turns into nine, until the clock starts ticking time, until the Lord calls out my name, just want love in your April rain, until the stars turn out their lights, when everything that's wrong is right, tell them my love was not in vain, just let me cry. Oh, rain, oh, rain, just let me cry.
What was that intentional? Just you wanted to just be completely, you know, 180 degree turn from the band?
What I wanted to do was show what my fourth of Living Color looks like.
Okay.
And where it comes from. You know, I really wanted to make a soul record, really, is what I was trying to make, as best I could. You know, Do You First notwithstanding. But I was really trying to, I wanted a record that sounded like a cross between, you know, Al Green and, you know, Doobie Brothers records.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With some Sam and Dave thrown in, and with some, you know, Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke sort of stuff thrown in there just for good measure.
You mentioned all those artists. I'd imagine you had a lot of influences throughout your musical career, right?
Absolutely.
It's not just one direct genre.
No, it's a bunch of stuff. You know, one of the biggest sort of touchstones in my life was Miles Davis's Bitches Brew.
Okay.
Like, it was on permanent rotation in my house growing up. I rediscovered it when I was in my early 20s. And that was a major sort of thing, and just in terms of sonically, it was amazing to me. You know, as Carlos Santana and Bitches Brew, Abraxas,
right?
And that kind of stuff was all a part of that as well.
Now, did all the guys in Living Color kind of each bring their own musical like influences to the band?
Absolutely, every day, you know. And where they came from, and we took as much of that, the disparate pieces, and try to put them all together. And it sounded like, we still do. We still try to take what we know from, what we get from Ornette Coleman. We still try to get what we know from, you know, Public Enemy. We still, what we get out of, like I said before, Santana,
right,
or Hendrix, or any number of places, any number of things, and even newer artists that we sort of come across, try to put that together.
Was it difficult at first for you guys to be accepted by the rock community?
It took a minute. It did take a minute. And, you know, some people thought that we were, that this was some sort of gimmick.
Right.
There are other people who've been in the business and been around. Everybody has a story about that one guy that they knew, that one black dude or that one black woman that they were friends with, who was deeply ensconced in the rock scene, or metal singer, or guitar player, or drummer, or something like that. There's always a story that connected. And we just sort of said, yeah, and there's much more. There's always been that way. It's always had that. We've always had that kind of thing.
Do you guys still experience that now?
Oh yeah, every now and then we get that kind of, do you accept what we are, having a hard time accepting what we're doing, you know. Sometimes it's, but you know, I think people are a lot more aware of what that is now.
I first saw you guys at the New York Music Awards. I think it was like 89, okay. I think it was. I remember, yeah, I was there for you and Debbie Gibson. So it was a big, you know, a spectrum there. And then seeing you guys open up for the Rolling Stones, which was, you know, amazing. Now you guys performed in, like, you know, clubs at that point, you know, around, you know, the city and, you know,
right,
country, I think England as well. Just playing into a stadium like that, do you guys have a, a different mindset going into it?
It was definitely different. A lot of the places that we were playing in before the Stones tour, before Steel Wheels, were very small clubs. Like our dressing rooms in Steel Wheels were bigger than the clubs that we were playing. So it was definitely a different. We had a different had to have a different perspective, you know, where who are you playing, who are you playing to, and how far, you know, can you reach somebody? And, you know, you had to get out there to, so for people to hear you and people to feel you. So the show had to be a little bit bigger and a little bit more intense in order for people to understand and sort of connect with you. In some cases, it worked relatively easily. Some places it was hard. Like people are just still there just waiting for, you know, waiting for the Stones to come out. You know,
right.
We're taking our time just to see.
Yeah. Because I was there for you guys. So it was just, you know, I was Stones, all right. But, you know, right. I was just there for you. And I kind of just kind of checked out after you guys went off the stage.
I hear you.
Yeah, I think that was probably their first of many farewell tours, right? And they're still going strong now, which is crazy.
They're still doing it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess Mick has a lot of kids he has to support, right? So he's got to keep
everybody has a tax bill, you know? Yeah,
absolutely, no matter how much you make.
Right.
Yeah, right. A few months ago, CM Punk came back, to World Wrestling Entertainment, and you guys recorded a new version called A Personality. Just talk about how that all started. I guess it was like probably what, 10, 12 years ago with him?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Punk seemed to, when he first started, he was in backyard wrestling. And that was his entrance music for backyard. And when he got to WWE, he was the execs there were like, okay, so we have a music division and they're going to write a song that sounds similar to that song that you use. He's like, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want my song. You know, this is what I want and this is how I want it. And he was like, he didn't budge on that, which I thought was very commendable and thankful. Right. I'm very, very thankful to him for that. And he told us that when he was a kid, when he was young, very young, and he was in Little League, his coach would play that as they entered this field, they came on the field. And that sort of obviously made an impact for him. That's why he kept it. And that's why he kept using, why he still keeps using it. And, you know, and everywhere he goes, he takes it with him, which we're very grateful for.
Right. Yeah, because I think maybe him and I think Ronda Rousey had Joan Jett coming out. But other than that, like you said, they write their own, you know, music.
Yeah, they write proprietary music so that, you know, basically it's an effort to keep everything in-house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and you guys performed it at WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So how many, like, do you think you drew in like a ton of fans because of Punk?
I think Punk sort of get people want to know where that stuff came from, where that piece of music comes from, and they do the research and they find out and they get it, and it works. It, you know, anything before that, we were on the soundtrack of Grand Theft Auto, the video game,
right? Yeah,
and that brought people in, and then before that we were in Guitar Hero,
yeah.
That brought people in. So whatever it takes to bring people to the table, we'll take it.
Right. And then the season or the series finale of Walking Dead, the song was featured as well.
Yeah. That was a surprise, actually. Okay. We didn't know that would happen until we were actually watching the episode, and there it was.
Wow. Yeah. And Punk was injured for WrestleMania, but maybe for next, will you think they would ever bring you back, the band, to perform it again live at WrestleMania?
Possibly. You know, there's a whole new executive structure
at
the McMahons are no longer a part of it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, maybe because of that, they'll new set of eyes will make it happen.
Right. Did that one just work out because it was at MetLife and you guys were already in New York?
No, I think the point was that we were going to, wherever it was going to be.
You were going to go.
We were going to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you guys ever wrestling fans?
Oh, yeah. 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 And, you know, it's such a male soap opera. It's funny. Hilarious. And sometimes you look at it for that sort of thing. And then, you know, these grown men in you know, swim trunks are beating the shit out of each other. What can you do?
Right. Yeah. I was into it when I was younger. And then my daughter started watching it during the pandemic. And she got me sucked back into it. And we were at wrestling in Philadelphia.
That's the thing. It's like, it's really easy to get sucked into it.
Yeah.
It's really compelling and very stories that you can latch onto immediately and then go from there. And then there's, you know, and the backstage intrigue and all that drama uncoupled with, you know, this exciting sort of people flying through the air, literally is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. My oldest son was in college now. He said, this is the dumbest thing ever. And then he watched it and it's like, he got more hooked than, you know, all of us. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you remember where you were the first time you heard Cult on the radio?
First time I heard Cult on the radio, I think I was driving. And I was just sort of like flipping around. And I caught the tail end of Cult of Personality. And I was like, wow, okay, we're on the radio.
Right.
At last. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have that. I have a term where it's, I call it stay in the car song, where you're driving somewhere, you get to your destination and the song is still on there. You stay until the song's over. And Cult is one of them.
Yeah. You know, sometimes there are very rare occasions and I'm walking down the street and somebody has it in their car, playing it in their car, and you hear it go by.
Right. Like,
that was me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. What about like the most interesting like place you've heard it?
Strip clubs are usually the most interesting place you hear that stuff. I was in an electronic store for whatever reason, and like getting something like a VCR fixed or something crazy like that. And I'm sitting there and MTV is on, and of course Cult of Personality comes on, and I start to shrink. And then I thought about it. No one knows who I am or why I'm here. No one's going to care.
Right.
And it was true. No one cared.
And you never like went around to the store and saying, hey, that's me up there.
Yeah, no, never.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now the follow-up to Vivid, which, you know, is still one of the best albums, I think, of all time, Time's Up, which had a lot of pressure on that album. And I think it did very well as a whole. Did you guys have a lot of pressure on you to like kind of produce another Vivid?
I think the pressure was all ours more than anything else. It was us trying to best ourselves and try to make something better than we did last time. And that was tough. That was really, really tough.
Right.
You know, even with Time's Up, the song Time's Up.
Yeah.
You know, it was our attempt at making a Bad Brains tune, you know. And that was where we were. Mm-hmm. That was always an issue.
Was it a no-brainer to bring back Ed Stasium as producer?
Oh, no. No, Ed was always going to be our guy. Yeah, Ed was great. And Paul Hammingson, who's his engineer, is always going to be that dude.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, the third album, Stain, which went in a different direction, including the cover. You know, you went different. Was that just because of this the tone of the album and how it sounded? You wanted to go different cover as well?
Yeah, I think we wanted to. We were trying to make it a better sort of scenario. You know, and this was, you know, Muzz was gone. Right. This is Doug's sort of introduction into this, and we had, you know, we still had a lot to prove, and we really wanted to cement what we are, you know, that it's not as metal as it is funky, as it is, you know, pop orientated, you know. It was always like, this is really there to establish that whole scenario, as to what we are as a band.
So what was the main reason you guys kind of split up in the mid-90s?
Tired. We were all tired. We've been, you know, from 1988 to, you know, up to that point, what was it, 93?
Yeah, that's when it came out.
Yeah. We'd been working nonstop. Like, we didn't get home. We weren't home a lot. We were constantly working, constantly out somewhere doing something. So by that time, we had, rather than suffer severe burnout on the road or out in the world, we just thought it's time for us to just give ourselves a chance to take a rest. And there were other sort of smaller sort of internal sort of skirmishes that we had to deal with.
Okay.
That were coming to a head as well. And we just needed to stop.
When did you guys know it was time to come back?
We never really knew. We knew, you know, I think in the back of our minds, we always knew we're gonna have to.
Right.
We had business to deal with. So we had to figure that out and figure out when and how we were going to do that.
Were you guys still, like, you know, communicating during that break?
Oh, yeah, we still talked. We still had, and everybody else had their own sort of musical sort of expression. That's when I did my solo record. Doug, Will and Doug had their thing together.
Yeah.
Ryan had his solo thing that he was doing. So we all needed to have, we needed that time to do that sort of thing.
Right. Now, what do you think the biggest differences are between, like, Vernon's playing and, like, Mike Orlando's playing?
Mike feels effortless. Like, it's not, you know, it comes from a particular blues idiom, obviously.
Right.
But that's what he's doing. Whereas Vernon is very much in the harmonic jazz sort of thing. He looks for the alternative for anything and comes at it sideways always. Mike just, it's sort of like comes out of his hands. It just, his hands just do it no matter what.
I mean, they recently announced the nominees for, or I didn't say nominees, the people got it or inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
You guys should be up there. I mean, the contributions that you've had to rock, I mean, I think are second to none. When those come out every year, do you kind of like look and kind of get disappointed when you guys aren't on there?
Not disappointed. It's just, you know, we know that there is a lobbying and politicking sort of thing that's involved in that whole process. And we have not really done that. We haven't made those kind of moves just yet, but we will eventually. And I'm sure at that point we will get nominated in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I hope so, because you guys definitely deserve it.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Good. I'm glad you think that. Yeah. Yeah. And I have to ask because it is fantastic. Your action figure. How'd you find out about that?
Guy who does our social media is like the guy who made the action figure called him and said, I have this thing. I actually have one. And he's like, would he mind if I give him one and he signs it? Would you mind me doing that? Like, not at all. Sure. Why not? See what happens. You figure it out.
Yeah. Cause I'm a collector. So I actually, you know, have a ton of action figures. I said like the Run DMC ones, Beastie Boys, you know, stuff like that. And like Star Wars, whatever, but I got to get hands on that one. Is it just you or the rest of the band as well?
It's just me. It seems, it looks like okay. For now. Just me. Right.
Oh, okay. Was Vernon pissed or no?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, if that action figure is successful, I'm sure he'll make other ones with the rest of the band.
Right. You know, it's great. It really is. Yeah. But bringing it back to Sonic Universe, May 10th, It Is What It Is comes out. Everyone check it out. It's fantastic. There are singles out now. I Am.
Close my eyes, but I ain't blind. I may be slow, but
the title track, and Higher. They're all on Spotify. Yeah. They're fantastic. Is there any plans for an album for Living Color? A new one?
Yeah, we're in the midst of writing right now, as a matter of fact. We were in the studio a couple of weeks ago doing some stuff, and we're going to get some stuff out. Whenever we have some free time, we're going to go back in the studio and get as much done as we can.
Oh, great. Can't wait to hear that. Corey, best of luck with Sonic Universe, all the touring, Living Color, and can't wait to see you.
Yes, definitely. We'll see you soon.
And a special thanks to Corey for joining me today. Sonic Universe's debut album, It Is What It Is, drops on Friday. Like I said earlier, it is fantastic. Check it out. Check out their website, sonicuniverseofficial.com. Follow them on X, formerly Twitter, at SonicUniverseCG. Corey is at RevDaddyLove on X, at InLivingColor on X, and also their website, livingcolor.com. And if you have a guest suggestion, you can hit me up on Twitter, currently X, at TheFirstNoel19, or like the page Living My Youth on Facebook. You can go to iTunes, check out all the past episodes, 7 years worth. While you're there, please rate and review the show. Don't have iTunes? Not a problem. It goes on SoundCloud, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, basically wherever you can find a podcast. A new episode comes out next week. Happy anniversary to us once again. Thanks everybody for listening.